If you're a firearms enthusiast like I am, or you have one in your life, let me tell you about the industry's best-kept secret, Bear Creek Arsenal. This is a veteran-owned and operated gun manufacturer, Bear Creek Arsenal, that is, based in Sanford, North Carolina. They make high-quality firearms at an incredible value. Learn more about Bear Creek Arsenal at bearcreekarsenal.com/buck. Use promo code BUCK to get 10% off your first order. One more time, bearcreekarsenal.com/buck and promo code BUCK to get 10% off your first order.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical bill expert, finding savings can seem impossible. Well, HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. So start saving with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in Thursday edition, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us as we are rolling through what should be a very fun show for all of you. Appreciate all of you out there listening live. Encourage you as always, download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a moment. The Biden administration getting nervous, Buck, evidently over the polling issues that they are seeing in swing states. There's a report that they are responding by hiring way more pollsters in the swing states, maybe just to try to get out polls that are more positive for them. We will discuss that a little bit. But one thing that Biden has not done so far is really, I would say, aggressively try to make his case to that many independent voters. You'll remember, Buck, we talked about Joe Biden turning down the Super Bowl interview. And I thought it was a colossal mistake. And then he followed it up by doing an interview with whatever that guy's name is, Seth Meyers, I think, on NBC that nobody watched. And they went and got ice cream. And I just kind of sit around wondering, what is their strategy? They're failing on Bidenomics. The bloodbath thing, I think, is bouncing back very much against them. And a story came out yesterday that was illustrative, I think, of how much the Biden administration tries to control everything that is asked of Biden and everything that he says. And it was from a friend of the show, Sage Steele, who was at ESPN for a very long time. And she left recently. She came on this show to talk about leaving. She's now doing a podcast with Bill Maher, focusing on long form conversations. But as part of an interview she did, she said that when she interviewed Joe Biden on ESPN, that every question was scripted and that she was not allowed to ask anything, no follow ups, anything else. Listen to this discussion. I'm curious your reaction, Buck.
This was about 2 months after he took office. That was an interesting experience in its own right because it was so structured and I was told, you will say every word that we write out. You will not deviate from the script and go to the word. Like every single question was scripted, gone over dozens of times by many executives, editors and executives. Absolutely. I was on script and was told not to deviate. It was very much, this is what you will ask. This is how you will say it. No follow-ups. Next. I knew that this was a lot bigger than just the wonderful editors that I worked with. This went up to the fourth floor, as we said, that where all the bosses, the top executives, the decision makers are, the president of our company, the CEO, where they all work.
Okay. So, Buck, I can say honestly, you and I, in 3 years of doing this show, and I bet you when you did your show before, and certainly when I did mine, there's never been a time where we've been like, okay, we'll script questions, or even said, okay, we'll refuse to ask a question about X or Y. We would not have been perfect in our interviews. I'm sure for you, sometimes you finish an interview and you're like, ah, I should have asked another question. But it wasn't because we were anything other than imperfect, as everybody is in their jobs every day. So what's your reaction to this? Because I have a ton of thoughts. I'm curious what your reaction is as a guy who doesn't usually watch what would ostensibly be sports coverage.
Well, for one thing, you can know for certain that this is not a one-off, meaning that this isn't just something that happened with Sage Steele. The Potemkin village approach to the Biden presidency and to President Biden himself, where it's all a facade, it's fake, they're presenting something that isn't real. That isn't just a thing that happens in the media. And if you really listen a little bit between the lines with Sage Steele, it is the expectation in media, meaning you aren't allowed to do journalism. It's not that people are choosing whether or not they will do journalism. It is the Democrat apparatus of the media has rules that don't even necessarily need to be spoken, but sometimes they're spoken and sometimes people lose their jobs over it. And a perfect example of this would be, you remember when the, what was it? ABC, those things all, I think it was an ABC reporter said that, you know, she talked to John Fetterman and the guy clearly has problems.
Dasha Burns, I believe was her name. Yes. And I think it was NBC, and everybody was furious that she was willing to admit that he had cognitive issues.
And it was all at once. I mean, it was a unified front of how dare you say a thing that hurts a Democrat in an election season, no matter how important it is, no matter how obvious it is, and no matter how much the public has a right to know about the thing you're talking about. This is true across the board. This reminds me a little bit of when we would see the most egregious examples of the censorship that they would do, Clay, against conservatives on Twitter, when it was Twitter, and on Facebook and these other places. And I would always say, for every conservative who's outright banned, there are probably 100 or 1,000 large accounts who are being shadow banned and who are being throttled and who, you know, it's an iceberg. What you see above the surface is just a piece of it. What Sage Steele is dealing with here is just the rules being exposed about how you're not allowed to do, you're supposed to call yourself a journalist to fool the public into thinking you're neutral so you can do the dirty work of Democrat propaganda for the Biden administration. That is the universal corporate Democrat expectation in the media.
And what I think is particularly unique about this story is this is outreach, because your average person who's putting on ESPN, and this is why it's so insidious, I believe, is not anticipating that they're going to get political related takes in any way. So they are interviewing Joe Biden. They are scripting every question, writing it out for allowing Sage Steele no deviations here. And they're also, I bet, and this is a question that ESPN should have to answer, I guarantee you they gave all these questions to the Biden White House before it started. So not only are they scripting questions, one of the reasons why you would script all these questions is so you could just send it along to the Biden White House and let them know in advance what he's going to be asked so his answers are better.
And it's also, it should be demeaning to people to play a role in this fraud, right? I mean, especially if you make a living, you know, I've never provided questions, and sometimes people will have their PR reps. I don't know what your stock answer is generally. And obviously we have a great team who handles like the PR reps who want to do a little bit of, you know, pre-interview setup. But whatever someone says, can you give me a sense of the questions? Topics, fine. I'll tell someone we're going to talk immigration. We're going to talk, and that's standard, right? You can give them because so people can be up on the news of the day. But if they're like, can you give me a sense of the questions? I tend to respond with something like, I'm going to ask you questions about the news of the day, or I'm going to ask you questions about the topics that we discussed. I've never provided questions in advance because it's just unseemly, right? Because there's something dishonest in doing that and not telling people that's what you're doing, right? You're a part of a front. You're a part of a fraud.
Also, I think part of being an interviewer is listening to what someone says and then following up with what they say. And based on what answers they give, potentially having a question that would not have been on any list in advance.
Sometimes you got to ask the same question more than once. Like, gee, Mr. Pence, will you pardon Trump if you become president? Maybe you ask it a few times in a row.
But I think for Sage Steele here, this is a form of liberation because she's coming out and telling the truth. But I think it lets you see behind the curtain how much of a rig job is in effect and how protected Biden is. And yet they still will not do very many interviews with him, even when you consider that much of this is set up impossible for him to fail. I don't even like, I don't know about you, I don't even really like that much knowing what the topics are going to be on television. I do a lot of Fox News hits, and I always say, Buck and I did 3 hours of radio. If I'm not prepared to talk on television for 3 minutes about any topic under the sun, then I haven't prepped well enough for radio.
Yeah.
So you can ask me anything, basically.
I never, as a host, I can tell you, I never ask for talking points. I don't understand why with certain people they ask for talking points. This is a standard thing in the business because we'll just roll with whatever. Like some of there's no question that I'm going to be like, oh, I can't handle that curveball, you know? So, and you're also not going to, I think that's an old model where people just want to get their talking points out. So I'm always bothered by that. I feel like it is a giant waste of my time when cable news shows ask me for talking points beforehand. And I generally try to avoid doing it. So I generally don't do it. They'll say it's because they want to know the POV or something. I don't know. I think it's worthless personally. But that all said, Sage Steele coming out and making this clear to everybody, you would think that maybe more people would be willing to say, yeah, I have the same right. We know she's not the only one.
Correct.
So why won't anyone else come out and back her up on this and say, yeah, I've had the same experience with Biden? It's because right now the people who are in our business, who are supposed to be presenting the public with the truth, their primary concern is, what will this do for me and my partisan belief system, especially after the election, right? Like, where do I go when this is all done?
I think it also, again, speaks to Biden's decrepitude that even with these rig job safety interview guidelines in place, he's not doing any interviews. So, and I think you have to tie this in with whenever you see him walk around with one of those cards and it says, you sit at the head of the table, you ask this question of this person. I don't know that we've ever seen a more scripted presidency. And yet the moment Biden goes a scintilla off the script, you can see how much this Potemkin village just totally collapses around him.
You know, there's generally two concerns when people are, when the handlers are all trying to make sure that there are no disasters in an interview. The concerns are the person will get asked a question that they, is going to be an attack effectively because,
yeah,
they're not, you know, so usually it would be, hey, Biden, why is the border so bad? The other thing could be maybe this person's just not a compelling speaker or is not good on their feet. So they're going to kind of fumble and bumble around. That's usually the concern. Clay, I think with Biden, the primary concern is, and just being honest, people just seeing him in real time and seeing the state that he's in. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not even that he would get cornered on an answer because he's Biden. He's like, oh, it's about folks. You know, he just say some nonsense. Seeing him in real time on TV when he's not on prompter in his little suit, trotted out there, you know, with whatever meds they're giving him, that's the problem they have. They just don't want people to know what's really going on.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to contrast that as we have with Trump. You and I have interviewed Trump 3 times now for an hour, right? We did it at Bedminster. We've done it at Mar-a-Lago twice, if I remember correctly, in person 3 times for an hour. At no point in time have they ever said any topic is off limits, or tried to give us any kind of scripted talking points. I think that's a credit to Trump and his handlers, but I think it's also emblematic of the massive difference in ability to just communicate between Trump and Biden right now. And what Sage Steele said is more common than not, I believe, for how Biden is being interviewed right now. And I think it should kind of give you a picture behind the curtain of what's really going on. Speaking of what's really going on, Saturday, Buck, final four for the men. I have got winners for the people at Prize Picks. I also saw, by the way, big news. Prize Picks has announced that they're hiring 1,000 new people in the Atlanta area and opening up a 33,000 square foot headquarters there. They put out a release. Atlanta Braves begin their season tomorrow. Congrats. That's a big hit. 1,000 new employees coming for the city of Atlanta. Congratulations. Big, 33,000 square foot office building in Midtown in the ATL. That's big. And unfortunately, I'm going to take some of their money and give it to all of you. gifts for the people here with these four winners. Zach Edey, less than 41.5 points, rebounds, and assists in the Purdue game against NC State. I think they're going to officiate him a lot more carefully and not allow him to stay in the lane for 20 seconds every possession like they did against Tennessee. DJ Burns, he's the star of the NC State team, a bona fide, lovable hero that has emerged. The round mound of rebound, the new version, points, rebounds, assist, more than 22. Mark Sears, engine of the Alabama offense, point guard, more than 28.5 points, rebounds, and assists. And Grant Nelson, he's a swing or a miss, almost nothing in the middle. I think he's going to have a good game. I think Bama plays well against UConn. Greg on our staff, UConn's been up by 30 points in all four of the games so far. Sooner or later, somebody has to give them a little bit of a game. I think Grant Nelson goes for more than 9.5 points. That pays, Buck, 10-1 if you go to prizepicks.com. Put in my name, Clay. Download the app today. It's fun. Does any of that make any sense at all to you?
It makes perfect sense, and I need you to nail this one because I think Carrie's going to Costco on Monday. Good heavens. The damage on the credit card. Who knows what's going to happen? So
that's
let's
right.
Get these picks right.
That's right. We need to hit four picks, 10-1 payout. Again, go download the app, prizepicks.com/clay. You can play in Georgia. You can play in California. You can play in Texas, and it can help Buck cover Carrie's bill at Costco. If we hit, fingers crossed, gifts for the people, prizepicks.com, code clay.
He's Buck Sexton. He's Clay Travis. Together, they're breathing sanity into an insane world.
The number one fantasy sports app in America is Prize Picks. It's the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. 5 million members already active on Prize Picks. If you've not yet downloaded Prize Picks, do it today. Unlike other apps, on Prize Picks, it's just you against the number. It's about the players and not the teams. You look for the sports you know best and that you follow the most. Then you make a single decision on each player projection, more or less. Every time you play, you pick 2 to 6 players and make that one decision. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 picks. More player action on Prize Picks now than ever, and it's the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states now. Prize Picks also gives you injury insurance so your picks stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. Download the free Prize Picks app and open your account. Use my name, Clay, for a first deposit match up to $100. Download the Prize Picks app. Use promo code Clay, that's C-L-A-Y, to get set up and get a deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Grand Canyon University, a private Christian university in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, believes that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. GCU believes in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose.
GCU equips you to serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community.
Change the world for good by putting others before yourself to glorify God. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's online, on-campus, and hybrid learning environments are designed to help you achieve your unique academic, personal, and professional goals.
With over 330 academic programs as of September 2023, GCU meets you where you are and provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Let it flourish. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University, private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey, it's Danielle, Will, and Ryder from Pod Meets World. Thanks to our friends at Hyundai, we were able to record a very special episode for you guys at the one and only, wait for it,
Boy Meets World House.
Take a listen.
We are lucky to be sitting with Alan and Amy Matthews in the flesh, William, Rusty Russ, and Betsy Randall.
Yay!
Thank you. Thank you. When those legends get here, let me know.
You're here. You're here already.
No, we didn't either when we were watching this. That's the problem. We didn't realize it until we started getting into seasons three and four.
And now we're like, oh my God.
You were both so good on the show, and we missed it because we were young kids and so self-involved. Egomaniacs. And didn't realize how great you were.
We've talked about it. I think you just assumed everybody was as good as them. And,
and then you get into,
as you grow up and you work with other actors, you realize how lucky we were to have you guys.
This has been brought to you by the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5. New episode out now. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts.
That was in the Wall Street Journal in their editorial pages yesterday. There's been a lot of talk, and we've certainly discussed it a great deal in the last 3 years on this show, about how universities should handle student protest and speakers that are unpopular on campus and all of these different aspects. And I don't know if we mentioned the Vanderbilt University college kids who protested against Israel by occupying university university facilities and refusing to leave. But the president of Vanderbilt, I guess the chancellor, maybe president, whatever you want to call him, wrote a piece, and it says free speech is alive and well at Vanderbilt University. Now, full disclosure, I went to Vanderbilt for law school. I met my wife there. I absolutely love this school. Okay. So, and my wife graduated from the law school recently. So if you, don't want to believe my opinion here because I'm an alum, certainly I can understand it, but I've ripped plenty of colleges that I've gone to. You heard me rip GW to the high heavens, over the fact that they had death to martyrs on the university library as a protest against, against Israel responding to defend itself. I thought this was interesting, Buck. There were around 28 students, 27 students. I want to read a paragraph for you. On Tuesday, 27 students violated the rules when they forced their way into a closed administrative building, injuring a community service officer in the process. Students pushed staff members and screamed profanities. What ends up happening? They arrested and charged three students with assault. One student was charged with vandalism. These are criminal charges. The remaining 25 students who were protesting have been suspended for violating university policies and violating the speech codes. And they are saying here, teaching students the importance, this is the chancellor, teaching students the importance of upholding rules for free expression doesn't squelch their right to voice their opinion. It protects it. Free expression is alive and well, but basically at Vanderbilt, if you violate the law, you're going to be charged with a crime and you're going to be suspended from the university. I love this. I love a university coming out and saying, look, you have the right to share whatever opinion you want. Nobody's saying these kids can't demand the divestiture of Vanderbilt's connection to Israel because they want to support Palestine. But if you shove police officers and you trespass and occupy university buildings and refuse to leave, there'll be consequences. And so I want every university doing more of this. Whatever the speech is, if you're going to allow students to take over a campus, eventually you give a heckler's veto, so to speak, for speech on campus and everything else. This is the right move, I think.
I think that there are big opportunities here for a number of educational institutions. You know, we partner with, for example, Hillsdale on this show. They're already doing the, you know, like Constitution, patriotic, real history teaching. But I think that there's an opportunity for other schools who aren't known necessarily as conservative institutions to just take the same path, the pro-education path, and watch their enrollments swell, watch their donations increase, watch their rankings, which, you know, I know we still have a little bit of a fixation as a society on like, oh, what's this school rank or what's that school rank? But for example, I mean, I just look at the University of Florida, where my wife went, and this is a school that has always had a very good reputation for a public university, right? I mean, it's been, but I mean, in the latest rankings, you can see it's gone up, 9 spots since 2017. So it is rocketing up, and these things are related in my mind to not ha- you know, getting rid of the DEI stuff.
Yes.
Getting rid of the woke indoctrination, focusing on actual education. You can make these relatively straightforward tweaks and have, or your adjustments, and have some pretty profound impact on the perception of the places as well as what's actually going on day to day. So there's a real opportunity here for schools to just say, you know, because half the country at least doesn't agree with this stuff, right? I mean, I think it's more than that, depending on the issue.
Yeah, and I wanted to give a shout out too. We mentioned the University of Florida firing all the DEI people because the state law was passed saying, hey, we're not going to do this. University of Texas just got rid of its entire DEI program too. So all these red states out there, your state institutions, I give credit to Greg Abbott, Ron DeSantis. This is destroying those institutions to a large extent from the inside. And if you run a company, you're bringing in these people that are destroying your company from the inside too. I think you have to be careful about who you hire. If people are obsessed inside of your company with only diversity, equity, and inclusion, I would suggest sooner or later you're going to get your ass kicked by competitors that care about serving customers far better.
You know, there's also a truism or a reality that I came into contact with in the various government bureaucracies that I worked in my 20s. When you have people who are paid to do a job and there really isn't anything productive for them to do, they will find things to justify their existence, their paychecks, and their powers. So, I think a lot of these places, especially some of the more old school institutions, you know, universities that are, elite. I think that they, and I'm going back here maybe 20 years, but they thought we'll set up this DEI stuff so that we don't get criticized for not having DEI. What they didn't realize is once you bring in the commissars, they start making demands.
Yes.
Once you have people who are paid, you know, 200 grand to give a lecture once a semester on how racist the school is, they're going to start making demands because one, they like the power, two, they're ideologues, and three, they want to be able to turn to everybody and say, this is what we're doing, right? So it's not passive. DEI is never going to be passive in these places.
Also, you can never have somebody who says, you know what, you're doing a really good job, because that would get themselves out of a job. Notice how nobody ever comes in for DEI and says, you know what, I think this company's actually doing a really good job promoting the best people to get the best jobs. No DEI person has ever said that, because if they say it, then they get fired.
Well, I think also
there's always work to be done.
You've seen this with some of the very well funded and very influential, formerly, gay and lesbian, nonprofits, right? That were pushing for gay marriage and things like that in the past. Okay. So then you have the Obergefell decision, and then now it's all about transgenderism. Because yeah. what are you going to say? We have full legal equality, and the fight is over, right? The fight can never be over because you need the donations. So now it's all you got to make your 8-year-old trans or you're a bad person.
Well, not only that. I mean, I think sports a perfect example of this. Every single person, I was talking about this some yesterday and having fun with it. Every single person out there who is a true sports fan would be super happy to have a gay or transgender star athlete on their team if it meant that they were going to beat their rival. If you told people right now, hey, your team can be completely heterosexual, but they lose every game, or your team can be half gay and they win the championship, every real sports fan would be like, I'll take the half gay team. People just don't care, right? Like in your own private life, if you want to make yourself happier and love who you want to love, I think the vast majority of people don't care. I know sports fans only care about wins, right? And companies should care about profit.
This is why the fight over women in men's sports is actually so important, even from the perspective of, you know, people that don't watch a lot of professional sports, because one of the only areas of public life where you can see true tests of objective excellence and where objective excellence is rewarded.
Yes.
Is professional athletics. It's one of the very few where everyone can see it, right? You can say, oh, well, like, look at this, you know, hedge fund guy's performance, or look at this doctor's number of surgeries. Yeah, but you don't have 20 million people watching the doctor do his surgeries, right? You do have that. So for the social impact, the psychological impact on our society is the one area where we can see what seems to be the objective competition that is supposed to elevate excellence. They're telling us, yeah, that 6'5" guy who weighs 240 pounds has no advantage over those 120 pound girls. And because if they can get you to say that, as we've said before, they get you to say absolutely anything. They can get you to say, you know, there is no difference between a penis and a vagina. It's the same thing. They can get you to say anything.
It's also why you never hear the DEI people say, you know, the U.S. men's basketball team needs to be more diverse. It's 12 black guys. It's not really representative of what the United States looks like. The 12 black guys are the best, right? And people want the best. DEI doesn't really work in sports because the best might... And you see where England was complaining because the English women's soccer team was too white? And you're like, well, are there non-white players that are better that should be on the team? Like, oh. Nobody cares about anything other than excellence in sports, and it gets shot down really quickly in the world of sports.
Well, this is also why... are honest. And this is also why when they say that, you know, women make 87 cents on the dollar or 77 yeah. cents on the dollar, whatever it is, find me a business that doesn't want to increase its margins by 20% and I'll yes. find you a business that's about to go out of business. I mean, that's just, it's also objectively, obviously absurd, but these are the things you have to believe the absurd to be a good person. That's the central premise of the Democrat Party. You know, there's something really satisfying about being able to do this show with Clay every day because we search for the truth, as we were just discussing. And we explore and take it wherever it leads us. But that's something that editor and writer Mark Chaykin also does. But he does it with respect to the stock market. Mark worked on Wall Street for 50 years. In his time on the street, he invented three new indices for the NASDAQ and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade. That includes the most recent mania in AI stocks. Mark says many Americans are about to miss out on a critical turning point in this AI frenzy. He's calling this a new dawn for U.S. stocks. And Mark predicts dozens of specific companies will be impacted in just the next 90 days. That's why Mark has agreed to share one of his favorite AI stocks to buy now with you. He put everything you need to know in a new presentation you can watch for free on a website set up for you, 2024AIStock.com. That's 2024AIStock.com. One more time so you can see Mark's favorite artificial intelligence stock right now. 2024AIStock.com, paid for by Chaykin Analytics.
Have fun with the guys on Sundays.
The Sunday Hang Podcast. It's silly, it's goofy, it's good times. Find it in the Clay and Buck podcast feed on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Second hour of Clay and Buck kicks off right now. We're going to discuss this drone strike that killed seven civilian aid workers in Gaza on Monday, a couple of days ago. A lot of political backlash to this in the aftermath of the strike. The headline here up on the Daily Mail, Biden is pissed. That is the quote. They say that Joe Biden is furious and is getting ready for a very tense phone call with Benjamin Netanyahu after the strike killed seven aid workers. This is what we know about it so far. IDF, and IDF has taken responsibility for this. They have said it is a tragedy. They have said it is an accident. And there will be a full investigation into how this could happen. It was a marked aid convoy from a World Central Kitchen, and they're trying to get food to people who obviously are facing hunger and even possible starvation in the midst of this war zone. So there's a lot of outrage from people about this. I think that one thing that has gotten perhaps the most attention in terms of the response to this so far has been Chef Jose Andres, who is the one who has coordinated this strike, has said, and team, let me know when we have him. We have it? Okay. Here is Chef Jose Andres saying that what Israel did with this strike was intentional. It was murder. Listen.
And this happened over more than 1.5, 1.8 kilometers. So this was not just a bad luck situation where, oops, we dropped the bomb in the wrong place or no. This was over 1.5, 1.8 kilometers with a very defined humanitarian convoy that had signs in the top, in the roof, a very colorful logo that we are obviously very proud of, but that's very clear who we are and what we do. But what I know is that we were targeted deliberately, nonstop, until everybody was dead in this convoy.
Targeted deliberately, he says. Jose Andres, this celebrity chef who's put together World Central Kitchen, I just think that it's important. First of all, Jose Andres is somebody who, at the very beginning of this, meaning right after October 7th, was very vocal, calling for a ceasefire right away. So the people who have called for a ceasefire after what we saw on October 7th, are, I think, acting in bad faith. They generally wanted Israel to suffer a horrific terror attack. If someone had told me that they wanted to call for, and there were some people who said this, very few, a ceasefire with Al-Qaeda and the global jihad after 9/11, I would have only had four-letter words to say to them about it, I think. And I think that a lot of Israel and the Israelis and the Jewish people feel the same way, as they should. The notion that this was intentional, let's unpack this for a second. If Israel wanted to blow up every aid convoy, they could blow up every aid convoy. And there's nothing the Palestinians could do to stop them. In fact, if they wanted to destroy every standing building in Gaza, everything, and kill everyone in Gaza, they could do so, and there's nothing that the people of Gaza could do to stop them. This only makes their actual mission more complicated. I would say, we say on the show, look at incentives. There is no incentive. Put aside the moral calculations here for a second. There is no combat incentive for the Israelis to do this. And I'm reminded of the horrific mistake that we made, or the Biden administration made, during the withdrawal from Afghanistan. We blew up a car with, I think, 6 or 7 kids. It was a father and his 6 or 7 children. We said it was a suicide bomber. We had a drone. We were following the car. We turned the whole thing into charcoal. And that was America. These kind of mistakes, as awful as they are, do happen in war.
100%. And that's what exactly where I was going to go to. I think we killed 10 innocent people in Afghanistan with the idea that this guy was driving around with a suicide bomb, or a bomb in his vehicle. And it turns out that he was a dad coming home from a work day, and we blew up his whole family. And that doesn't mean...
We did not do that intentionally. I can say, you know, knowing the people that make these decisions, and the yes. Biden administration did not do that intentionally. They didn't say blow up a bunch of kids. Nobody wanted that to happen. It was a colossal screw-up. There was no accountability for it, but that's another conversation.
Yeah, and by the way, intent is important here, because the way that that celebrity chef is phrasing things, he's making it sound like they intentionally killed these individuals. It doesn't, they could have intentionally targeted this group, with the idea being that it was somebody else, as happened in Afghanistan. But the real intent here, which we seem to be forgetting, was the intent of Hamas to kill as many Jews as possible without fail. What Israel has done since then is try to respond to guarantee that Hamas cannot do again what it did on October 7th. And so I'm sorry. I don't have a lot of sympathy for anyone who is allowing Hamas to still exist in all of the Gaza region. That's why this is going on. Hamas began this war. And now that they are reaping the consequences of beginning the war, I don't have any desire for Israel to stop until they have ended Hamas's ability to do this again for potentially generations, maybe forever. Now, the challenge, of course, is when you are dealing with people who believe that they are going to die and be martyrs and get 70 virgins, when you are dealing with irrational people, dealing with them rationally in fighting a war creates a whole nother generation of people who are going to continue to want to rain down depredations upon the Israeli people. That's the reality of where they are. And so the idea that, what I don't like is when one incident like this turns into a major flashpoint of, oh, this is unacceptable. Israel is saying, I believe, Buck, that they have killed somewhere in the neighborhood of 15,000 Hamas fighters. And people in Gaza are saying there's 30,000 people that have been killed. It's hard to figure out exactly what the numbers are, what percentage are combatants, what percent are so-called innocent lives. And the reality is, this is impossible to do without there being some loss of innocent civilian life. And your point is a good one. If Israel wanted to carpet bomb Gaza and basically wipe Gaza off the face of the earth and kill everyone there, they could legitimately do it.
Place. Yeah. There's nothing.
And they could have done it on October 8th. They could have done it on October 8th. They could have rained down holy hell upon Gaza and ceased to have anyone alive, basically, in that entire footprint. They've actually tried not to. And I thought it was Douglas Murray, was it, Buck, who made the argument that you talk about what is a justifiable response, what is commensurate with the proportional response that is allowed. Nothing that Israel has done is as evil as what Hamas did to Israel on October 7th. None of it. Because their intent from the get-go has been to try to avoid killing anyone but enemy combatants, and Hamas has hidden enemy combatants all throughout places where innocent people would be. Hospitals, schools, churches, synagogues, Muslim places of worship. They have hid people wherever they could to try to make Israel look like the bad guy whenever they go after them.
I mean, Hamas fighters, in the name of the Palestinian people, and with orders from above to do this, gang raped and then murdered Israeli women and Israeli teenagers. They did that. When someone does that, the only response in a just world is to hunt them down and kill them. And they haven't killed all of the Hamas fighters. So the fight is not over until they do. And this is how I felt about bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and what they did to us on 9/11. So I afford our Israeli brothers and sisters the same rights of self-defense as I would afford the American people. And have. So I don't see this the way that the Jose Andreses of the world do, that there's some kind of moral parity here, and that it's fog of war and both sides are doing these bad things. The only thing that Hamas did on October 7th was pursue evil down into the depths of hell and try to kill as many people who were defenseless and who were innocent and who had done nothing to them as they possibly could, and mutilate them and sexually abuse them. And it didn't advance their interests as a nation state. It wasn't about some kind of a territorial dispute, really, ultimately, because that's not going to get them.
It wasn't even anyway, Buck, even a military attack, right? Like,
that's what
I
mean.
Wasn't as if they were trying to do something to the people who were actual soldiers only.
Ask yourself this. What is the concession that Hamas thinks that it was going to get from doing that, and also taking the hostages? They didn't take hostages so that they could negotiate a long-term and durable peace and then return them all. As we know, they've killed hostages in their custody and sexually abused them as well. They did all of this out of just sheer malice. It was just an act of malice and hatred and viciousness. And the only way to respond with that, I mean, if someone, you know, breaks into a home, rapes and murders a family, and then walks out and says, you know, I want to have a conversation about the challenges I've had in life, the proper response is to execute that individual. And that is what the Israelis are doing by chasing down the Hamas fighters who came into their country and did this. And I think it very strange that people that I know, I'll say this, even on the right, who have shown clarity when it came to our fight against the jihadists, against Al-Qaeda and its affiliated entities, basically the global jihadist ideology, or really just jihadists because it's always global, some of those same voices are thinking that somehow the Israelis aren't in a similar struggle. They actually are in a similar struggle. The parallels are very clear to me. I don't see why anyone on the right wouldn't understand that.
If people from Mexico or Canada, but anywhere on our border, crossed over and killed 1,200 innocent people, do you think we would stop because we accidentally killed 7 innocent people or 7,000 innocent people if we thought that we had not ended the threat that could ever happen again? Of course not. So I wouldn't expect Israel to do anything less.
And Mexico and Canada would never do that as governing states. The people in that country, in those countries, would never do that. And I know you'd say, oh, all people are capable of evil. It's different in the areas of Gaza and the West Bank. I have friends who have interviewed mothers in the West Bank, for example, who lost their children in a suicide bombing. This is back in the earlier days of the Second Intifada in the early 2000s. And the mothers beam with pride that, you know, their 20-year-old went into a pizzeria in Jerusalem and blew up, you know, a dozen people and had ball bearings shredding people's, you know, faces and lungs. And they thought that was great.
Yeah.
They thought that was really, and that's widespread. Just to be clear, that's widespread. the Hamas entity gives money to the families of suicide bombers and still does to this day. So this is, it's official policy from all the way on down to be as vicious and inhumane as possible. And it is, and this is tragic to say, but it is ultimately rooted in hatred of the Jewish people. And that is just the truth from somebody who has seen it himself by being over there and understanding the mentality of these jihadists. So I get that for people like Jose Andres, they think that all people can be bad. And why don't we all just get along? And why can't we all be friends? Maybe we can get along when every Hamas fighter is dead or in prison and Hamas is no longer governing Gaza. I think then the Israelis and the Palestinian people have a real shot at having a conversation about the future. Until then, I don't think there is a conversation to be had. That's how I see it. 800-282-2882. If you think I'm wrong, let me know. Soon in theaters, about a week from now, a new epic depiction of our nation in crisis mode. It's a movie called Civil War, directed by filmmaker Alex Garland, and getting good advance reviews. It's a vision of America you'd only want to see in theaters and not in real life. If you binge watch The Last of Us, which I did, by the way, or have seen Apocalypse Now, great movie, it's nearly in the same vein. It portrays a dystopian future America and a team of military-embedded journalists racing against time to reach Washington, D.C. before rebel factions descend upon the White House. The Rotten Tomato rating is 92% right now. It's produced by A24 and written and directed by Alex Garland. Buy tickets in advance for this theater experience, including select IMAX theater screens. The cast includes Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, Nick Offerman, Jesse Plemons, and others. The movie, again, is titled Civil War. Make your plans now to go see it in theaters next weekend.
Don't miss a day of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show.
Grand Canyon University, a private Christian university in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, believes that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. GCU believes in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose.
GCU equips you to serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community.
Change the world for good by putting others before yourself to glorify God. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's online, on-campus, and hybrid learning environments are designed to help you achieve your unique academic, personal, and professional goals.
With over 330 academic programs as of September 2023, GCU meets you where you are and provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Let it flourish. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey, it's Danielle, Will, and Ryder from Pod Meets World. Thanks to our friends at Hyundai, we were able to record a very special episode for you guys at the one and only, wait for it,
Boy Meets World House.
Take a listen.
We are lucky to be sitting with Alan and Amy Matthews in the flesh, William, Rusty Russ, and Betsy Randall.
Yay!
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
When those legends get here, let me know.
You're here. You're here already.
We didn't either when we were watching this.
That's the thing. That's
we didn't
the problem.
Realize it until we started getting into seasons 3 and 4. And now we're like, oh, my God.
You were both so good on the show. And we missed it because we were young.
We were kids and so self-involved.
Egomaniacs. Yeah. And didn't realize how great you were.
We've talked about it. I think you just assumed everybody was as good as them.
And then you get into
as you grow up and you work with other actors, you realize how lucky we were to have you guys.
This has been brought to you by the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5. New episode out now. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's there for heroes or the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is severely injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans and who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families.
The Foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America in so many ways. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year, dozens of golf outings, and the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute's educating kids in K-12 grades to help our nation keep its vow to never forget.
More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Joined now by the host of Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe. He has done a phenomenal job. Writer, narrator, producer, Emmy Award-winning, best-selling author. I mean, that's a lot of aspects out here. Mike, we appreciate you coming on, and we were talking about it a little bit earlier, and I was even reading, I think in the Wall Street Journal recently, a story about people who are younger in their 20s starting to embrace plumbing and everything else, Clay, in a way. Yeah.
It's how Gen Z is becoming the tool belt generation.
Are you optimistic, Mike, that a lot of people are maybe stepping into jobs that they didn't foresee 20 years ago people being interested in?
Well, it's a little early for a victory lap, although I'd love to take one. We've been at this for 16 years now, you know, trying to challenge the idea that the best path for the most people is the most expensive path educationally, and also trying to shine a light on about 10 million open positions right now, very few of which require a four-year degree. These jobs require training, vocational education, trade schools, and so forth. So it's a bit like pushing a boulder up a hill or maybe turning around a tanker, you know, in the middle of the ocean. Pick your metaphor. But it takes a long time to challenge those kinds of stigmas and stereotypes that surround the trades. This article got my attention, and everybody on my social pages all tapped me on the shoulder and said, look, this is really encouraging. You know, it's not what a lot of people expect Gen Z to do, right? This is the generation that is most often targeted as lazy and entitled and spoiled and all this other stuff. But it's like they got the memo and they've looked around and they've seen a lot of diplomas hanging on a lot of walls and concluded quite rightly, that it's not necessarily an indication of what you've learned. It's an indication of what you paid. It's a receipt. Right. And $1.7 trillion in student loans is no joke. And Gen Z doesn't want any part of it. They want to learn a skill that's in demand. And I think that's good news.
Hey, Mike, where do people who are thinking about this, like how, you know, if you're somebody who's, let's say you're 18, you're senior in high school and you're considering it, what are some of the pathways? I mean, is it just applying to trade school? There are apprenticeship programs and how do people learn more about, for example, what would be a particularly in-demand trade in their area or particularly high-paying trade in their area? What are the resources?
Well, you can't possibly screw up by learning how to weld. Welding is like the gateway into the skilled trades. My foundation has trained hundreds of welders. We've helped a couple thousand people get the training they need to start whatever trade they're into. So to answer your question, microworks.org. Shameless plug, all kinds of information on my site, along with $1 million right now we're giving away next month in scholarships for trade schools. But there's so many ways to go, Buck. I mean, there are certainly community colleges and there are obvious trade schools all over the place. A lot of big companies today have their own internal programs. You know, when we took shop class out of high school 40 years ago, we really kind of unleashed the Kraken. You know, that decision removed from view so many vocations. And so we went through a period where a lot of millennials didn't even get a look at what work looked like on that side of the workforce anyway. So it's been a long road back, but the resources are all over the place. Companies are falling over themselves to hire. The opportunities to get training are everywhere. I can't overstate it. It's been one of the great unreported stories in my lifetime. The skills gap, 10 million open jobs, all that opportunity sitting around. At the same time, we've been told you're screwed if you don't get a four-year degree. It's literally the opposite.
I think that's so important, Mike, because you mentioned the $1.7 trillion in student loan debt. Let's say there's a 18-year-old who's you know, listening to us right now. And his options are, I can take out tens of thousands of dollars in debt to get an English major. Nothing wrong with that.
degree, which is not necessarily going to lead me towards being better at any particular profession, or I can go start being a plumber at 18 or 19 years old. You're stacking tens of thousands of dollars in assets, and you're starting off when the college kid's coming out at 22 or 23 in tens of thousands of dollars in debt. You could have tens of thousands of dollars in savings. How much do you think people are now recognizing that? And are people still not aware of how much money there is out there in plumbing or electrical work or all these other things? You mentioned welding. What else would you tell people that there is abundant opportunity in if they'll just go grab it?
Electricians. Electricians are in super short supply. Plumbers, steam fitters, pipe fitters, heating and air conditioning guys. I mean, I can't even tell you if you're not making six figures and you're in that space, you're either just getting started or you're unwilling to go to where the work is. But even then, I mean, the work is pretty much everywhere. The trap, Clay, in your question is really the reason that I'm not in politics. I'm sure there are some 18-year-olds listening right now, but I don't know who they are. I don't know what their skills are. I don't know what their attitude is, right? And so much of what our elected officials do, and unfortunately what guidance counselors do, is they paint with a really broad brush. And you wind up hearing from a lot of people who have a certain amount of influence that this is what your kid should do, or this is what you should do. And I think it's that tendency to talk in platitudes and paint with a broad brush that's brought us to the place where we are right now. We're still a country of individuals, and your kid, your 18-year-old kid, might very likely be wired in a profoundly different way than mine. So I'm kind of stingy with advice in terms of telling groups of people what to do, but you can't ignore the big trends. You can't ignore 10 million open positions right now. You can't ignore. You want to hear some really horrible math? The number that scares me more than $1.7 trillion in student loans is five. Every year, for every five tradesmen who retire, two replace them. Now, that's been going on for over a decade. And when you start to just extrapolate that out, what you realize real fast is this is not just a conversation about companies who are struggling to recruit talent or kids who are struggling to find a path to prosperity. This is a conversation about how long Clay Travis and Buck Sexton want to wait for a plumber when they need one, or an electrician. Every single person listening to this has skin in the game, because every one of your audience members shares my addiction to smooth roads and affordable electricity and indoor plumbing and a long list of other stuff that we've been taking for granted long before dirty jobs went on the air.
You know, Clay, my uncle is a tradesman and a locksmith, like a skilled locksmith, you know, specialty stuff for, you know, corporations. And my brother-in-law is actually a welder. Carrie's brother is a welder. And one thing I hear from both of them is they just don't have the time to do all the jobs that people want them to do, which is not a thing you often hear from that many folks. Like, there's so many offers to do different work in different places that they can't get to it all. So Mike, I mean, I'm experiencing that for my own, you know, extended family. What they're seeing out there. I'm just wondering to what degree also when you're the CEO of Micro Works Foundation, you're encouraging young people to go into this, but you know, entrepreneurship, small business ownership. I mean, it's been my experience from people I know, some of whom have become very successful business owners, that a lot of them start by working for a business in the trades.
And this is part of the sort of the disaster scenario. When we took shop class out, we also impacted not just the skilled workforce, but the entrepreneurial gene. The path to a small business so often begins with the mastery of a trade. I mentioned welding before because, you know, I know people who are underwater welders today. They make $300,000 a year. I know others who are TIG welders, you know, who are making $100,000. And I know some who are making less than that and are basically punching a clock. But the most interesting cohort are the welders who hired another welder, or more likely hired an electrician and some HVAC guys and then bought a couple of vans and started a mechanical contracting company. Those guys are everywhere, and they are the engine of our economy. And their success stories aren't told nearly enough because they start by doing something that so many parents have come to believe is a vocational consolation prize. I don't want my kid to be a welder. Well, the hell you don't, man. I can give you example after example. And Buck, just a quick sidebar. I don't know if you'll remember this, but I saw you 10 years ago. I think you were filling in for Beck.
Yeah.
And you did a story on one of my favorite stories of all time. Nobody talks about it today, but it was a message to Garcia. It was a story about initiative, and it's a story about work ethic, and it's a story about the willingness to cheerfully take hold of a thing and lift. That's part of this conversation too. And my foundation, you know, we award work ethic scholarships because we're not just looking to fill an existing hole. We're looking to find people who are willing to show up early, stay late, take a bite of the crap sandwich, cheerfully volunteer for whatever task is at hand. That's still for sale. That still works. And if Gen Z is the cohort that steps up to do that with the tool belt and a new understanding of what a good job is, God bless them.
Mike, last question for you. You mentioned parents or grandparents. How much encouragement do you see from them? And I know there's a lot of people out there that are worried their kids are not working hard enough. Maybe they're not making great grades in school, but they do have that work ethic and they're trying to find a way. I think most people have no idea that you can make six figures doing a lot of these jobs. Do you think parents and grandparents are making their kids aware enough of that opportunity as well? Or do you think they've been sold the idea that only success comes through the pathway of college? You can't do anything else.
Again, I hate to paint with a broad brush, but the short answer is yeah. By and large, we have an idea in our head about what a good job looks like. And look, most parents also want something better for their kids than whatever they had. The problem is, what is better, right? I mean, we get to decide how much debt is good. We get to decide if work, for instance, is the proximate cause of our unhappiness. There's a very popular narrative in this country right now that says that it is. That's why you'll see support for Bernie Sanders' 32-hour work week. Crazy. But if you believe in your heart that the reason you're unhappy is because you're working too much, or if you believe, like genuinely believe in your heart that you're going to be happy when you retire, then you've bought into an existing narrative that is in fact persuasive. And it's persuasive because it's mirrored constantly in sitcoms and movies and advertisements. We are surrounded by this idea that work is the enemy. And that you're a failure if you're a parent, if you don't get your kid into a proper school. So yeah, I would say to parents who believe that, you might be right. Maybe your kid is exactly wired to do all of those things, but you might be wrong. Put all the options on the table. Have an honest conversation about the realities of debt and the advantage of learning a skill that's in demand. My final thought is, you know, this, I'm holding my cell phone in my hand right now and I'm looking at it because that is a liberal arts education and it's free. All the information I learned when I was in school in 1984 is right there, man. If you're curious and you really want to learn whatever floats your boat, you can watch a lecture on it right now for free at MIT or Brown or Yale. It's all there. Learn a skill first. Master a trade. Go to work. Get rich.
Mike, what's the website one more time for anyone listening? Because I think some people listening are really interested in following up and learning more.
MikeRowe.org, okay. I believe, is the website. MikeRowe.org. He was fantastic. You gave him the last line there. But, man, I know people love that. We'll take some of your reactions as we close up shop. Buck, what you got for us?
If you have valuables such as jewelry, gold, silver, family heirlooms, you need a safe to protect them. More than 2 million Americans have chosen Liberty Safe for this once-in-a-lifetime purchase. An American-made Liberty Safe fits anywhere with more than 30 models, 24 colors, and thousands of custom options to help create the safe of your dreams. Liberty Safes are guaranteed for life and can be delivered and installed in your home by a national network of expert dealers. I've got my own Liberty Safe here at home. Carrie and I use it every day. And your privacy is built right into every Liberty Safe with industry-leading privacy protections because your safe is your business. Shop LibertySafe.com/radio for a customized fortress-strong Liberty Safe. Use promo code RADIO for a 10% discount. That's libertysafe.com/radio. Use promo code radio for 10% off.
Sometimes all you can do is laugh, and they do a lot of it with the Sunday Hang. Join Clay and Buck as they laugh it up in the Clay and Buck podcast feed on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to supporting our nation's first responders and veterans, heroes who put their lives on the line for our communities and our country, heroes like U.S. Army Major Jonathan Turnbull.
He sustained devastating injuries at the hands of an ISIS suicide bomber, the complete loss of his left eye, a puncture to his right eye, and he needed more than 20 surgeries and countless hours of rehabilitation. Tunnel to Towers paid off his mortgage and gave Major Turnbull a specially adapted smart home designed for his needs. He moves around his home more easily now. His home also gives him hope.
With help from people like you, the foundation supports families like the Turnbulls. Join Tunnel to Towers in supporting America's heroes, our nation's severely injured veterans and first responders, homeless veterans, Gold Star families, and the families of fallen first responders.
Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. 95 cents of every dollar goes directly to their programs. Grand Canyon University, a private Christian university in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, believes that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. GCU believes in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams, offering over 330 academic programs as of September 2023. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.